Hello, everybody. Hey, welcome to the Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival at the Ann Arbor District Library. Woo! My name is Jersey Drozd. I'm a cartoonist and teaching artist, and I'm one of the organizers of this festival, and it is my duty to say thank you, oh my gosh, thank you to the Ann Arbor District Library for everything you guys do to put on this event. This is an amazing building filled with amazing people who bring in all these amazing cartoonists, so thank you to the Ann Arbor District Library. Thank you to 826 Michigan. There's going to be events happening there this weekend, or today, and at the Ann Arbor Arts Center as well. So if you haven't, go pick up one of these great programs at the Welcome Desk, and you can check out all the amazing stuff happening today. Is anybody here playing the summer game? Do you want a game code?
Yeah.
Okay. Today's game code, you got 300 points coming your way for showing up today to this, and there's game codes at all the events this weekend, guys. But this game code is Angleburger, 300 points. Text this code to 4AADL.
What is that? It's not Angleburger.
Oh, it's not. It's Anger Belger.
Oh, my gosh. It's...
You know, I'm looking at this backwards.
You'll have to get bonus points for this one. Angle, Angle Belger.
Anger Belger, right? Angle Belger. Okay, 300 points coming your way. I do want to say that the... What's that? Okay. Angle Belger. We got it? All
right. That's A-N-G-L-E-B-E-L-L-G-E-R.
Tell your parents. This event is being recorded, so I do ask very kindly, please silence your phones. Any electronic device that makes beeps or boops, please quiet it so that everybody can enjoy the amazing presentation that's about to happen. What presentation am I talking about? Well, look at these people behind me. We've got CeCe Bell and Tom Angleburger here in the building today. Let's give a round of cheers for El Defo. And Rocket and Groot, stranded on Planet Strip Mall. You get these books that I'm signed today. After the strip presentation with that, I'm going to shut up now and hand it over to Tom Angleburger and CeCe Bell.
Hey, thanks, everybody. Hi, I'm so glad to see you guys. Oh, man, this is so exciting. This is awesome. I'm so glad that so many of you guys came out tonight. Is it tonight? It's this morning. I'm glad you guys came out this morning. This is fantastic. Now, I've been told not to wander too far. See, I'm kind of an all-over-the-place kind of person. So if you guys see me, especially maybe you guys in the front row, if you see me go too far, you yell at me, okay? It's okay to yell at me. Just yell, and I will go back, because I'm supposed to stay in this area. But I have trouble. I have trouble staying still. I'm very excitable. I'm a very excitable kind of person. So, and one of the things I'm excited about is comics. Are you guys excited about comics? Oh my gosh, I'm so excited about comics, and it's crazy because it feels like when I was a kid and I was excited about comics, it felt like no one else was excited about comics. It felt like I was like the only person. In fact, I thought today I would sort of tell you what my journey has been like, and I call it the journey from the nerd who couldn't draw. You guys can read that? Everybody can read that? The nerd... It's my journey from the nerd who couldn't draw to today, a nerd who couldn't draw. Can't draw. And so my story is the story of somebody that just loves comics and comic book stuff and adventures and stories and stuff. And I just kept at it for so long that eventually somebody let me actually do it. Does anybody know what that one book that I wrote was about, like Star Wars stuff? You know what I'm talking about? Right, it's Origami Yoda, and Origami Yoda has been the best time of my life. I've had so much fun, and it's all because of the nerd part up here, right? Because nerds like Star Wars, and nerds like origami. And one day when those things came together, it was like my brain exploded, and the Force was with me, and my whole life changed, all right? But to get to that point, before I got to that point, I had to start somewhere. And so we're going to go back. We're going to go way back to the seventh grade when I started writing my first comic strip. Can anybody guess what my first comic strip was about? Can anybody guess? Anybody? Larry. Your name is Larry? What's your name? Lucy. All right. Now, Lucy, what do you think my first comic strip was about? Exactly. Oh, actually, Yoda had Yoda been invented that year? Yeah, sure. We'll say Yoda was around, so we'll say Yoda was in it. I didn't know about Origami Yoda yet, so it's the real Yoda. Okay, there he is. I did mention that I don't draw very well, right? We covered that earlier. I don't want anybody to be disappointed. So there was Yoda, but it had something else in it. Anybody know what else was in it? Anybody know? Do you know? You know what else was in it, right? You got any ideas? Can you guess? Just make a guess. Can you guess? Star Wars. We got Star Wars covered. Anything else you think I might have been interested in when I was in seventh grade? Origami. Sure, we'll get some origami in there. I noticed you've got an origami crane on your shirt, right? I was totally into origami cranes when I was in the seventh grade. And I never got good at folding them. The tail often looked kind of like this. Has anybody ever had that? It's the French fry tail. It happens all the time. And sometimes the head, instead of being this nice point, it's got this like extra blob over here or something. And people are like, what's that? Apparently a leech got on the crane or something. There's like it's difficult. I was never good at origami. A lot of people think that I must be like an origami expert, but that's not the case at all. I'm still not good at origami. All right, but anybody else? Can anybody else guess what else is my story? Back there, your name is Larry, the young lady there. Your name is Larry, is that right? What's your name? Della, what do you think I drew about in the seventh grade? My teachers. Oh, man, I should have. We have this teacher. There was this teacher, and some of you may recognize him. Has anybody ever seen this guy? Does anybody know what I called him in the book? Anybody know what his name is? Mr. Howe. In the book, he was called Mr. Howe, but in real life, he was his... maybe I shouldn't say his real name in real life, but just in case his lawyers are still around. Boy, he was he just sat there, and he had big teeth. He was a nasty guy. He was real nasty. Anybody else guess what I wrote about? Maybe back there with the orange shirt. What do you think I was writing about in seventh grade? What? Legos. Yeah, I did love Legos. You guys know the stuff I loved, yes? I loved Legos. So we'll draw. This is Mr. Howe confiscating my Legos. Oh, man. You know, one of the important life lessons in the seventh grade for me was don't take your toys to school. Never take your toys to school, man. It ends in tears. And in my case, a lot of tears up and down the hallway. It was it was mass hysteria, in fact, created by taking toys to school. So don't take your toys to school, especially if this guy is your teacher. Anybody else guess what I was writing about in the seventh grade? What do you think I was writing about in the seventh grade? What would you write about in the seventh grade? Kissing? Mostly kissing? Is that right? She would? You would write about kissing? She would? Oh, I thought it was a joke. She would write about... Who should be kissing Mr. Howe then? It'll be a love story for Mr. Howe. Who is kissing Mr. Howe? You? No. Your mother? What? I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. Who's kissing Mr. Howe? How about... this was a long time ago. How about if it was Miss Morgan Fairchild? You guys know Miss Morgan Fairchild, a very attractive lady. And she's puckering up for a big kiss. She looks kind of like a whale. I don't know what happened. In real life, she was very beautiful. She's puckering up with a big kiss for Mr. Howe. Anybody else guess what I was... What do you think I was writing about in the seventh grade? Yeah. Your name is Larry, is that right? Oh, Larry, go right ahead. What was I writing about? I was writing about Ella? Oh, your name is Ella, and what was I writing about? I was writing about my classmates. Oh, absolutely. Some of you guys may even know who some of my classmates were from reading my books. How about, does anybody know this classmate? And just drawing him. What a loudmouth. Oh, man. Anybody know who he is? Harvey. What a grump. Good grief, dude. Oh, man. Oh, wait a minute. Harvey was me, not my classmate. Oh, I should have made myself look a little more attractive. Yeah, my classmates. I ended up writing about all this stuff when I wrote the Origami Yoda books. You know, it's all that kind of got mashed up to become Origami Yoda. How about one more thing for my seventh grade comic? What do you think I wrote about in the seventh grade? Yeah. What? Oh, hold on. Who? What? Oh, first I'll get Larry, and then I'll go back to Larry. Larry, what do you think I wrote about? Girls? You think I was writing about girls? Oh, my gosh. Actually, I hadn't met Cece yet, but yeah, eventually I would meet Cece. And, I got to make her look better than that. And I don't know what, don't let Cece see this picture. It's not turning out very well. Eventually, I did meet Cece, and I put her in Origami Yoda, too. Anybody know what her name is in Origami Yoda? Anybody? Nobody knows. She's Caroline in No Origami Yoda books. And I was going to go to Larry. Larry, what do you think I wrote about in the seventh grade? Somebody named Larry. I wrote about somebody named Larry. Yes, yes. You're picking up on, I wonder what Larry looks like. I think he looked a lot like you, if I'm not mistaken. Just like, hold perfectly still so I can capture your likeness. I did mention I don't draw very well, right? We covered that part? Okay, all right. There you are. What are you doing? You've got what are you doing to you're cleaning out Yoda's ear with a big Q-tip. Okay, all right. I don't know what you're doing. Okay. All right. And I've got to go to the wolf person back there. Is it a wolf or a panda? What? You're a panda. Okay, I couldn't see the, yeah, a panda. Panda, what do you think I was reading about in the seventh grade? The Greek gods. Wow, that would have been cool. I might have turned out to be Rick Riordan, and he sells a lot more books than I do. I wish I had written about the Greek gods. Let's see here. Which Greek god do you like? Hey, panda boy, panda person, panda. Panda's not paying attention. Hey, Panda, which Greek god is your favorite? Snickers? No, never. Okay, which one? Poseidon, great. He's down here in the water. So, I think it's all coming together now. So here's Poseidon. He's the king. He's the king of the ocean. And he doesn't wear a shirt. I don't know what his problem is. And he's got like the little trident here. He's got a bathing suit. Oh, good. He's got a nice bathing suit. I was really concerned that he didn't have the bathing suit. Woo! Thank goodness. Okay, there's Poseidon. And so Poseidon says, release the Kraken. And Mr. Howell jumps out of the water with a Lego. And Yoda jumps in to save the day. But first he has to get his ear cleaned out by Larry. And then Harvey complains. And my origami's terrible. And nobody wants to kiss me. And then finally Cece shows up and she's really nice. How's that? All right. Woo! That worked out. That is actually the true story. Every bit of that was the true story of how I became whatever it is I am right now. It's I tell people I'm still a nerd, but now I'm a professional nerd. All that stuff that I used to do for fun, now I charge people for it. What I used to do was I wanted to tell stories so bad I would print up my comics and give them away. You know, I'd give them away for free. And sometimes the comic book store would want me to charge something for them, so I would put on like a quarter. And so once you put a quarter on it, nobody will touch it. And you're sitting there, and people are paying like $10 for Batman 3000, and you're like, well, nobody will buy my comic for one quarter? It's rough. It's a rough world out there. But when you've got a story to tell, man, you've got to tell it. So there I was, working at the Xerox machine, printing up my comics, taking them down to the comic store, and trying to sneak, sometimes having to sneak them on the shelf when the clerks weren't looking. And I just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And so I wish I had it to show you right now, because this end of this whole journey of mine, well, hopefully not the end, but a milestone on it, is next week my first Marvel cover comes out. All right? My first Marvel cover, asterisk. Okay, it's one of those variant covers. You know about those variant covers? So it's not the cover, but it's Rocket and Groot 6, and it is my cover. And what it is, I'm going to save you guys like $4.95 now by telling you about it. What it is on the cover is Rocket teaching you how to draw a rocket. Okay? Now, when I say Rocket, of course, I mean Rocket Raccoon, right? The crazy thing was, after Origami Yoda got to be a success, I started getting calls from places. They were like, would you like to write about such and such? And it'd be like, and they would call me up, and they would call you up with these weird ideas. And you'd be like, no, I don't want to write about that. And then I got a call from Marvel. And I was like, wow, man, that is awesome. This is going to be awesome. But You know, I'm not really, you may have noticed, I'm not really a superhero kind of guy, right? I wouldn't really know how to write about, like, the X-Men. I don't really understand the X-Men. I wouldn't know how to write about them. I might like to read about them, but I can't really write about that stuff because I'm just a nerd who can't draw, and I want to write about Legos and Poseidon and all that kind of stuff. And so then they said, would you like to write about Rocket and Groot? Yes, I would like to write about Rocket and Groot, and I can do it because with Rocket and Groot, anything is possible, man. It's a talking raccoon and a talking tree, right? There's nobody's going to say no to any idea you have about a talking raccoon. There's one rule. I found out there's one rule. Baby Groot cannot be called Baby Groot. You still have to call him Groot. You have to have your respect for Groot. Even when he's this big, he's still Groot. That's like the only rule we've run into the whole time. So let me show you guys now how to go about drawing Rocket, Raccoon, and Groot. So you're going to draw a X like that, okay? Anybody know what the X is going to be? Anybody guess what the X is going to be? What do you think the X is going to be? Right, it's going to be Rocket's eyes right in the middle of his mask. So I'll go ahead and I'll draw a circle there and a circle there. That's going to be his eyes. And then you come over here and you give a little squiggle. And you come over here and you give a little squiggle. Now see, since I can't draw the way some of the good artists here can draw stuff. You know what I'm talking about when they draw stuff? You ask them to, you tell them, like, draw a raccoon, and they start going like this. You know what I'm talking about? And they do this. And they keep going, and then they're like, okay, I'm going to do the eye line. And they go like this for about half an hour. And then you're like, oh, dude. And then all of a sudden you look at it, and it's gone from this to like an actual picture of a raccoon that looks like an actual raccoon. I've never figured out how to get from this to the actual raccoon. So I've had to come up with like steps along the way. And so these are my steps along the way. So now what you're going to do is you're going to start down here. You're going to go up, loop, and down. Is it starting to look like a raccoon yet? Kinda. It's not, I got to tell you, it's not going to get a whole lot better. So if you're not satisfied yet, don't get your hopes up for the, okay. All right, so now what we're going to do is we're going to color in his mask because he's got like a black mask, right? And of course, if I was really doing this, I would still do it just as sloppy as this. And the way this worked out, by the way, some of you may be wondering, why on earth would Marvel let me do a whole book with these terrible drawings in it? What sense does that make? Well, the gag is that since I draw as badly as an actual rodent would draw, we would just say that Rocket Raccoon is the one drawing the pictures. So instead of saying, that's a terrible raccoon, start thinking, hey, that's a pretty raccoon. That's a pretty good raccoon, considering it was drawn by another raccoon. That's sort of the attitude you have to have when you look at this. So it took me a long time to figure out where to put the nose. I kept putting the nose up here. You want to leave just a little bit of white space. Now, this took like a week. A week of me drawing, getting this far, and putting the nose in the wrong place. The nose goes right there. Okay. So now we need some arms. I don't like to, there's people that do this stuff. They know like how, they always go like this and they know right how long to make an arm. You know what I'm talking about? You've seen them do that stuff. I don't know how to do that. And also, I don't have the patience to figure that out twice, you know, for two arms. So what I like to do is something like this. Okay, see, there we go. And so there's one arm and there's the other arm like that. And then he's got three triangles. That's as close as we're going to get to a raccoon hand. It's three triangles. There we go. And then come out here, and he's got a tail. Now, I learned how to draw tail lines from copying Garfield back in the seventh grade. And he wears, what's that?
He looks like a baker.
He's a baker? Yes, he's totally a baker. Let's see here. Yes, this is from my new book of Rocket and Groot recipes. Okay, all right. And now I'm finished, actually. I don't know if anybody's seen the first book. I've actually finished the second book now. I still haven't learned how to draw a Rocket Raccoon's legs. So every time it's a bit of a struggle, but I sort of go down here and I just sort of scribble around a little bit until it looks like he's standing on something. Okay, so that's as good as the legs are going to get. And That's the feet. And then, we're going to give him some eyes up here. And we're going to make him look a little bit mean. Does he look mean?
He's usually grumpy, but then he's always got like this smug smile, and he's got a little, he's got a couple fangs sticking out. He's what?
He looks like Wicket.
He looks like Wicket? You like Wicket from Star Wars? You like Wicket? Oh, he looks wicked. Oh, okay, he's wicked. He's wicked. He's, okay, all right. How do I make him? Now, he's already a baker. Now, how do I make, what?
He's a wicked baker.
He's a wicked baker. All right, wicked baker. Wicked Baker. In fact, that's going to be the title of my autobiography. Wicked Baker. All right. So now I've run out of time to show you how to draw Groot. And actually, often by this time in the illustration process, I'm getting kind of bored. You know, I'm like, I'm ready to move on to the next one. So I just draw Groot over here on the side. Okay? See, he's a tree. He can be off the side. You just give him one eyeball and like half his mouth, and then you stick, he's got like sticks over here for an arm. Okay, so there you're done with Groot. And then actually, I did think that we were definitely lacking in girl power in a book about two male, whatever they are. And I don't know if you guys know what the Bechdel test is. I wanted to pass the Bechdel test really bad. So I knew I had to get some girl power in here. So we invented this new character. And she's actually also going to be on the cover of the of that comic book. I'm very proud of that. And her name is Veronica the Tape Dispenser. Okay? I told somebody, you know, I was able... By the way, the Bechdel test is if you get two girls talking to each other or two women talking to each other in a story. That doesn't sound very hard, does it? It seems like it should be pretty natural. But Hollywood often misses the boat on it. But I wanted to make sure. So I've got my talking tape dispenser talking to a homicidal robot who's also a lady. And so that's how I passed my test. And somebody was disappointed by that. They were like, oh, you mean they're not real people? And I'm like, there are no real people. It's a raccoon in a tree. Okay? It was a lot of work to get the tape dispenser in there. So anyway, here's our tape dispenser, and her name is Veronica, and she usually shows up to save the day. And as you guys can tell, I've just had a ball. I've just had so much fun with this crazy story. There's Veronica, the tape dispenser, and there's her tape. And I've had so much fun making this. And, oh, she's got a little antenna here. She's a super intelligent tape dispenser. And at the beginning of the book, they think all she can do is dispense tape. But then they find out that she can dispense justice. I've been trying to sell the movie with that tagline. There's some confusion so far. All right, so that's my Rockin' a Groot story, and I've been having so much fun with that. I've been having a ball with that. And as anybody who read Origami Yoda knows, you know, I just love making the crazy stories and putting stuff in there. But sometimes I want to tell a story that's bigger than what I can draw, right? Sometimes I feel like the fact that I can't draw is a limit on me, and I want to be able to make a story that's bigger than what I can draw. So luckily, I happen to know, like, the greatest artist in the world, right? I happen to know the greatest artist in the world personally. So I had this idea for a story, okay? And the story was about a plant, and he's in a flower pot, and he solves mysteries.
Upside down flower pot.
It's what? Upside down? Is it upside down? It's not so, well, see, that's the problem. I warned you I can't draw very well. Cece, would you come up and draw? Would you come up and draw while I tell them about it? Cece, ladies and gentlemen, a hand for Cece. She's going to come up here. She's going to draw a picture of the flower pot and hopefully the flower and all that stuff. In fact, I'll get the book out and show it to you guys. Let's see here. Oh, my goodness. Here we are. This is our new series, and it's called Inspector Flytrap. And my idea was I wanted to have a Venus flytrap that solved mysteries, right? That's why he's called Inspector. And then because he's a flytrap, that's why he's called Flytrap. Inspector Flytrap. And I wanted him to go around and solve mysteries. And then the first thing I thought, of course, was like, how is a plant going to go from one crime scene to the next? And so... Can you put the... Hey, look, he likes this thing. Yeah. Hey, can you get the skateboard on there?
Yep. But,
so, he rides around on a skateboard, right? But, of course, he doesn't really have any legs either, so he can't do that thing they do and all that kickflip stuff. So, he has an assistant named Nina the goat. Can you just draw Nina over here a little bit? So I had all these crazy ideas, but I didn't know how to draw them, and it was beyond me. So I asked Cece if she would start drawing some of the pictures, and as soon as you see how awesome Nina the goat is, you'll see why I needed her help to tell the story. So what we have now is in the next year, there'll be three of these books coming out, and they're all, the illustrations in them are just awesome, and the story's kind of kooky, but the illustrations are beautiful. I hope you guys, if you try them out, you will like them. And there she is, ladies and gentlemen, Nina the Goat, pushing Inspector Flytrap on the skateboard. All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to turn it over to CC. Thank you, CC.
Thank you. All right.
Woo! Thanks, guys.
Hi, hi, hi. Awesome. Okay, is this thing working? Yeah. Can everybody hear me? Okay, yes. Cool. You can see why I married this man. He's very loud. That was a huge attraction, very loud and very clear. So some men aren't, so voila, Tom. It's very cool to be here, and thank you all for coming out to take part in all of this good comic stuff. I like to talk a lot about how, Tom talked a little bit about this, how he feels like he can't draw very well. And I disagree with that because he just stood in front of you and drew. But the truth is, I think a lot of artists feel that way all the time because there is always going to be, and right now there is so much talent in this room, there's so many comics people in this room who I think Tom and I both feel are better than we are. Well, you kind of have to put those feelings of I can't draw aside, because what's more important is that everybody has a story to tell. And in my case, I was so desperate to tell my own personal story that I was able to put those feelings of, well, I'm not sure if I can draw well enough for this, I was able to put those aside and focus on I'm desperate to tell this story. I need to tell this story. And for me, the story is this book, El Defo. Yes, some of you have it. Oh, thank you. All right. Oh, thank you. Which is basically the story of my life. And the reason that I needed to tell this story so badly was because at the time, I was about 38 years old, 38, a full-fledged adult, and I still was not able to say the words, I am deaf. I could not say those words in front of people, and I was tired of it. I kept having experiences where I just needed to be able to say those words. If I could say those words, then everything would be easier. Then people would understand, and then they would know how to communicate with me. But I just couldn't do it. And so finally, I was ready to put all this down on paper, and I thought, you know what? If I not only just tell somebody, but tell the entire world, then it'll make it easier. And believe it or not, it really has, because I just stood in front of you and said, I am deaf. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Oh, thank you. So believe it or not, I am still deaf. And so I always like to start out by taking out my hearing aids and showing everybody that these little machines are how I hear and how I've been hearing basically for about 41 years. And but my hearing aids as a kid were much different from what these are now. But anyway, when I take these out, I can't hear myself speak at all. But I can tell that I'm speaking because all of you are looking at me like I make sense. And I can feel my neck kind of vibrating, so they work. And I'll put them back in. But basically, the story of how I lost my hearing is in El Defo, and some of you may have read it. And basically, in a long time ago, in 1975, when I was four, I got really sick with meningitis. Really? Okay, you're four. Awesome. Four rock. Four is a good age. When I was four, I got really, really sick, and I had meningitis, and that's an infection of the membranes of the brain. And I got better. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. I got better, but somewhere along the way, during that 2 weeks, I lost about 90% of my hearing in both ears. So what's important to note was when I was four, I knew how to speak. I already had, most kids by the time they're four, they kind of understand communication. They know how to speak. And so I had that in my back pocket. And that helped me move forward. It made wearing hearing aids and speaking a lot easier for me. So backing up a little bit, when my parents figured out that I couldn't hear, they got me set up with a little hearing aid. That looked kind of like an iPod. It was a little box. Cords and little earpieces, and the important thing to note is that when the audiologist put that hearing aid on me, put the earpieces in my ears for the first time, and turned up the volume, what I heard no longer sounded like speech. It sort of sounded like speech, but it was garbled, gibberish. It just, you know, wah, 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 blah, 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 blah. Just weird sounds. And the truth is, all these years later, 41 years later, that is still exactly what speech sounds like. Exactly. So what do I do? So what I have ended up doing and what I learned how to do in kindergarten is something called lip reading. And this is basically, me washing people's mouths very, very carefully to see what their mouths are doing, and then trying to figure out with the sounds from my hearing aid and what's going on with people's mouths, what they're saying. But I'm not just reading lips. I'm reading people's emotions. Are they mad? Are they happy? Are they angry? I'm looking around to see, are they holding something? Are they talking about a book? Are they holding their, you know, I mean, they might be holding something. What are they doing? What are their gestures? I'm reading everything, not just their mouth. And this is important because it really plays into comics really well, which I'll get to in a second. But lip reading is what I do, and I did not learn sign language. And I always like to say the reason for that is because in 1975, when I was taught how to lip read in a classroom with other deaf kids, they did not want to teach us sign language, they being the teachers, because back then the thinking was deaf people should only speak and only read lips. Well, I completely disagree with that because sign language is vital for so many people. And so I hope you always remember that sign language is an incredible language. I simply don't know how to do it. I'm a lip reader. But anyway, with lip reading and comics, I wish very much that people came with closed captions. Okay? Just like on TV. If people would just come with closed captions, my life would be so much easier. Well, comics are essentially closed caption people, closed caption superheroes. And to read a comic means you get to understand it all the time. And that's what I love. And that is why El Defo is in this format. And why comics are so great is because of the amazing speech balloon. The best thing in the entire world. And what makes the speech balloon so awesome is even if you think you can't draw, you can always draw a speech balloon. It's just a little circle, and you leave a little gap, and you draw a couple of lines, and you have a speech balloon, and that's everything. So the speech balloon in El Defo is there. It's just a very versatile thing, and I think a lot of graphic novels, one of the most important things that graphic novels do is they inspire empathy. And the reason that they inspire empathy is because they are, they're letting the reader have the exact same experience as the character in the book at the same time. And so in my case, okay, that's supposed to be me with hearing aids on, and I am looking at this person, and this person is about to speak. And so in comics, in this comic and in my real life, if I have my hearing aids in and I'm looking at the speaker and the speaker talks, and if the speaker does not have a beard or mustache, and the speaker speaks to me, and he says, I like to eat pie. I understand it, right? Because I've got my hearing aids in, I'm looking at the speaker, I can see his mouth, and even better, if he's holding a poorly drawn pie, even better, even better. So then, though, if in comics and in real life, if I am wearing my hearing aids, okay, if I'm wearing my hearing aids but I am not looking at the speaker, I'm not looking at the speaker in a comic book and in real life, and the speaker said, I like to eat pie. Okay. Ah, we are. Not all of the consonants are gone. All I can hear are the vowel sounds. And so all of you in the audience who are reading this and seeing this, especially hearing people, it's sort of like a moment where you can think, oh, boy, now I know what it's like to experience this kind of deafness. And to the kids and folks here who are wearing hearing aids and cochlear implants and or can't hear very well, they know exactly what this is like. And so they get to see themselves in a book. And this is the power of comics. And finally, if I am not wearing my hearing aids and I'm not looking at the speaker and my head's up in the clouds somewhere and the speaker wants to tell me just how much he likes pie, nothing is going to be in that speech balloon because I'm not paying attention. I'm not there and I can't hear the person. So that sort of, that speech balloon can do so many things, and so many other comic book people before me have done that stuff. So that's my little comics blurb. But before I finish up, I always like to talk about the hearing aid that gave me superpowers. And if you've read the book or if you haven't, basically what happened was for first grade on, I was in a school where there were no other deaf kids, no other kids like me. For kindergarten, the kids were just like me. We had a whole group of deaf kids wearing hearing aids, and it was awesome. But for first grade, I moved, and the new school did not have a program like that. So to help me, my parents purchased a wonderful, elaborate, beautiful hearing aid called the Phonic Ear. And this hearing aid is featured a lot in the book. And basically, and you remember my little hearing aids, this is much, much bigger. So basically, I would strap this on every single day before school, and, okay, and the earpieces would go in my ears, and then I had these two cords, long cords, and I would go around like this, except my elbows were not out all the time, okay? They were down, but anyway, you know what I mean. So this is how what I wore every day for school, but I always kept it covered. I did not wear it like I'm wearing it right now on the outside of my clothes. Because even as a first grader, when you sense that people are different from you, you don't like that. And so I kept it covered. But it still made my clothes bunch up. And so when the other kids asked me, well, what's going on with you? What's underneath your clothes? My answer was not, I'm deaf. Because I didn't say that, remember? It took me a long time to get to that point. I didn't say I'm deaf. I said, I'm pregnant. Gonna have a baby. And so basically, I was pregnant from first grade until sixth grade. Because I wore this for a long time. But I kept wearing it, and I kept wearing it because the teacher's microphone, this was the teacher's microphone that she wore around her neck, and it worked in conjunction with my hearing aid to make her voice really loud and clear, but only for me. So basically, wherever she was in the room, I could hear her loud and clear as if she were talking in my ears. It always sounded like she was talking right directly in my ears. And very soon after I got this setup, I discovered that I could hear her in the entire school building. Okay, so that's a huge part of the book. I could hear her walking up and down the hallway, smoking, gossiping with the other teachers. And the number one question I get when I visit groups like this is, was it true that you could hear your teachers in their most vulnerable moments when they were relieving themselves on the porcelain throne? And, of course, could I hear my teachers when they used the bathroom? And the answer is yes. And it was horrible, but it was also awesome. And, of course, I had to put that in a book, right? Okay, so how did I know? And I'm going to give a little demonstration of how I knew my teachers were using the bathroom. Because when people go to the bathroom, and my teachers back then, they didn't walk down the hallway and say, hey, Cece, my bladder's kind of full. Oh, look, there's a door. It has ladies written on it. I think I'll open the door, have a seat, take care of business. Now, people don't do that. They just go. So I had to be a sound detective. And fortunately, I am just creative enough to be able to fill in the blanks. People who lip read do a lot of filling in the blanks. And so here is what I heard. Creak. Zip. Rustle, 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 rustle. And then there would be a sound, and someone has marked the page for me, thank you. It's a beautiful page. It's a work of art. Then there would be a sound as if my teacher was standing next to a river, a flowing river, a magical river with possibly yellow water, but a river. And I would think, I did not know that there was a river in front of my school. Oh, wait. There's no river in front of my school. That's pee. And so after that, there would come a sound. And the sound that kind of, when I absolutely 100% knew that my teacher was in the bathroom, and it is not the flush like a lot of you are thinking. It's a sound that almost all of us make when we use the bathroom. Ah. Oh. And then that was followed by ooh. And that is when I knew that my t-shirt was in the bathroom. And so, although this was horrible, the reason it was awesome, it was because I was hearing my t-shirts in their absolute most vulnerable moments. And so in those moments, I had power over them, and I could suddenly see myself differently. I was no longer that deaf kid who couldn't even tell people she was deaf and couldn't even hear very well. When I put this equipment on, I was like Bruce Wayne turning into Batman, because Bruce Wayne is a wealthy guy. He uses his money, buys equipment, straps it around his waist, and turns into Batman. Well, I was putting this thing on every day and turning into El Defo, superhero. And so the whole book is, do I use my powers for good or for evil? And hopefully more for good. But I know that I'm almost out of time here, so I'm going to draw a quick picture of El Defo, my superhero alter ego. And I would also love to just say, everybody truly has a story to tell. And comics is a perfect medium for telling those stories, because as long as you can draw a speech balloon, it doesn't matter what else you're drawing. You can draw two dots, and two dots can have a conversation, and you're immediately telling a story. So comics rule. And so let me draw real quick. Thank you. It's been a while. Okay. Here we go. All right. So thank you, guys. Thank you. Awesome.
I think we can all agree that both Cece and Tom have used their creative powers mostly for good, which is great. And thank you both so much for your talks and for being here. I am here. I am Dan Mishkin, one of the organizers of Kids Read Comics and the Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival. And I am here to present the second annual Duane McDuffie Award for Kids Comics. We created this award to showcase the wide range of terrific, just terrific comics for young readers, for kids and teens being published today. And it's such a wide range, in fact, that Tom and Cece and all the terrific creative people you're going to see over the next 2 days, they don't even fill up a fraction of the great comics that are out there. Something for everybody, really. So because there are so many great comics, it meant that our judges for the McDuffie Award, a librarian, a comics retailer, a comics reviewer, and a writer, they had to read over 100 books that were published in 2015 to come up with a short list of 10 outstanding comics, and then spent many, many hours deliberating to come up with a single winner from those. They sought out excellent comics that were aimed at children through age 13, and they used four main criteria for selection: quality, timelessness, originality, and diversity. Those four values tell you a lot about what we're doing here at Kids Read Comics, at A2CAF, why we even exist in the first place. They also very much fit the man that this award was named for. Dwayne McDuffie was a comics and animation writer, a winner of the Humanitas Prize, the creator of Static, a wonderful teenage superhero who first appeared in 1993 in Static Shock, the animated series that was based on the comic. Dwayne was also my friend and a supporter of Kids Read Comics. Just days before his unexpected and untimely death 5 years ago, he told me that he'd finally be able to come out to Ann Arbor and join us to show that support in person. And we would have welcomed him year in and year out. But I didn't just like Dwayne. I admired him for his talent and for his principles and for the way he stood up for those principles. And I literally looked up to him. I'm 6'4". He had like 2 or 3 inches on me, which is kind of unusual. He once told me that he was the shortest male in his family, but I found out later that was just a story. But he's definitely taller than me. Dwayne believed in comics. He believed in kids. We shared the belief that comics can expand young minds and change young lives for the better. We lamented together that superhero comics, which he and I had spent a lot of time writing over the years, that the superhero comics were steadily leaving kids and teens behind. So one time when a rumor was spreading that DC Comics was going to be put under the control of Cartoon Network in the vast Time Warner empire, I was thrilled. I was just tickled at the possibility that Dwayne and those he worked with on cartoons like Justice League Unlimited would be able to create comics, fill the shelves of comic shops and bookstores and libraries with superhero comics that finally, once again, really appealed to young readers. And I was pretty sad when that rumor turned out not to be true. But it was something to wish. But, you know, even if Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman aren't in that mix of great comics for kids anymore, there are great comics for kids and teens. They come to us in abundance and in amazing variety. And the Dwayne McDuffie Award shortlist contains fiction and nonfiction, fantasy adventure and slice of life realism, human and animal protagonists, and work that's intended for the youngest readers, the beginners, through middle school. And those books on our shortlist are Awkward by Svetlana Chimakova, Chi Sweet Home, Volume 12 by Konami Kanata, Courtney Krubrin, Volume 7, Tales of a Warlock by Ted Nafee, Flop to the Top by Eleanor Davis and Drew Wang, The Flying Beaver Brothers and the Crazy Critter Race by Maxwell Eaton III. By the way, you don't have to remember all these. There's going to be a little sign when you go up to the Kids Read Comics table upstairs. Human Body Theater by Maris Wicks, Lumberjanes, Volume 1, Beware the Kitten Holy by Noelle Stevenson, Grace Ellis, Shannon Waters, and Brooke Allen, Nathan Hale's Hazardous Tales, The Underground Abductor by Nathan Hale, who's one of our guests this weekend, Ultraman by Tomohiro Shimoguchi and Aichi Shimizu, and The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Volume 1, Squirrel Power by Ryan North and Erica Henderson. And the Dwayne McDuffie Award for Kids Comics for 2016 goes to Awkward by Svetlana Chimakova. Let's hear it. Awkward tells a story that's both unique and timeless. It's a story about the missteps of middle school, about the rivalries and hurt feelings, about the many twists and turns of friendship. Svetlana couldn't make the trip to California, from California on short notice to accept this award in person, but she recorded a video so that she could speak to all of you this morning.
Hi, my name is Svetlana Shmakova. I am the author of Awkward, which I'm told is a pretty good book. I'm really nervous, so I wrote a little speech I'm going to be looking at. I am so happy that Awkward has been chosen as the recipient of this year's Dwayne McDuffie Award for Kids Comics. Thank you. I have many, many people to thank, people without whom this book would not exist. One of them is my editor. Thank you for seeing me through my darkest moments of writing this and being my tireless champion. To thank my publisher for bringing this book into the world and making sure people see it. Also to my husband. Hello, husband. He's on camera. For his patience and unwavering support during this stupid long time it took to make this book. Really, really long time. I would also like to say something about the personal significance this award has to me. When I read about the award, I was so happy to see that one of the four judging criteria was diversity. When I create my work, inclusion is something that's always at the forefront of my mind, and not just because I think it's absurdly overdue. It really should be an everyday norm by now in our society, but also because I was an immigrant and I experienced it. I experienced inclusion, not just tolerance, but inclusion, an act of actively being included in things. And I was a kid, and it was so important. And that's what I tried to make awkward. And that's what I feel kids' comics should be, and all comics should be, a place of inclusion. Because diversity, it's not a quota to be met. It needs to be an internalized understanding that everybody has value and everybody belongs. Accepting and actively fostering diversity is so important, and that's why, while I'm truly, truly thankful to be the recipient of this year's award, I am even more thankful that this award exists. So thank you so much for this honor. Thank you for the award. I hope that it goes on forever and continues to highlight many, many great comics for kids in the future. Have an amazing day. I'm going to go and eat a whole cake by myself now. Thank you.
So thank you, Svetlana. Thank you, judges, for your hard work, which I hope was also really enjoyable work. I'm quite sure that it was. Thank you to my friend Dwayne McDuffie for your inspiration. Thank all of you for coming. One last word. Signed copies of Awkward by Svetlana Chamakova are going to be available for sale at the Kids Read Comics table upstairs when Artist Alley opens, and that's right now. Artist Alley opens up on the first floor. Thank you all so much for coming. Have a wonderful, wonderful time.